Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Well, here we go. Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, here with my business partner and always great co-host, Al McDonald. Al, how is your day going?
Going great and very excited to have a return podcast guest with us today. So very interested and excited to see what he has got to share with us since the last time we spoke.
Absolutely. Excited to welcome back a familiar face to the podcast, Ghassan Halazon, founder and CEO of Emerge Commerce. Ghassan, good to have you here with us again.
Awesome to be back, guys.
Well, a ton has happened since our first conversation, our last conversation, and I really want to dive into everything. And your sector is particularly interesting, especially what's happened over the last couple of years. So we're talking about e-commerce. There's been significant changes. It's transitioned from the peak of the pandemic to what we're currently looking at. Can you talk to us about how your company, Emerge, is navigating the shift? And what's that look like for you and your team?
You got it, Robin. Thanks for having me. Excited to be back. Really, e-commerce has been through quite the roller coaster over the last couple of years for any of your listeners and viewers that may not have caught on to. But, you know, there's no secret that the sector, e-commerce, has been or was one of the darlings of the pandemic, for lack of a better word. And, you know, sort of fly high years there at the peak pandemic. And then obviously as online behavior sort of started trending back down to planet Earth, so did a lot of the brands and the businesses that were online first or online only. With Emerge, as you might recall, I think when we came on as well, we were sort of in the midst of acquiring and integrating a variety of e-commerce brands. So at the peak, we had about $120 million worth of businesses under our portfolio, ranging from grocery and golf to pets and outdoor gear and experiences and travel. So we were quite an eclectic group of brands. And in many ways, we originally set out to build what at the time we were sort of referring to as sort of a constellation software of e-commerce. And with this storm that we encountered in this space, to say it lightly, we've had to recalibrate our thinking and pretty much double down where we were winning. And so have many other e-commerce companies. And so there's a wide-ranging level of outcomes out there. But in terms of Emerge, we've sort of taken this opportunity to clean up and double down where we're winning.
I've stayed in touch with you throughout the years, and I'm very grateful for your friendship. And obviously, I love chatting with you. But when I look to people like yourself, and even myself, I'm looking back over the last couple of years. And, you know, our company is turning 20 years old this July. And I look at all the great times, but I also reflect on all those times where I wanted to pull my hair out and I was wondering what I was doing. And I know the mechanisms I had in place to kind of stay focused and make sure I didn't go astray, sort of thing. I'd just love to hear about some of the things that you did during that time, because I would imagine it would have been really challenging the last couple of years to say, hey, we were flying this high and then this happens.
Right.
Outside of work, Ghassan, you and your family, how did you stay, hey, I know what I'm doing, I'm committed to this, I'm focused, I know we can get back to where we want to be. What were some of the things that you did during that time that might help other people who are either in that now or at some point in their career, they're going to run into times like that?
Absolutely. That is a terrific question and really hits the heart of how we kept the house together in a way. I mean, obviously, the storm, we believe, is pretty much winding down now. We're really excited about the future. I'll tell you about that on the back end here. But Firstly, it's a mental game, right? When you put yourself in my shoes, you know, we sort of buy a couple of companies, the world explodes in a good way for e-commerce in particular. Obviously, the pandemic was a bad thing for everyone on a personal basis. But from a business standpoint, to see something double and triple overnight was a super exciting business journey for us. And to see that quote unquote fizzle very quickly was really tough to deal with. And I think some of the basic principles are, you know, there's nothing revolutionary here, but, you know, kind of watching out for your health, making sure you're exercising, making sure you're reading other things that take your mind off some of these really tumultuous times. And I think spending time with people that inspire you, right, that continue to have, and especially when there are a few chapters ahead where they've seen storms before that they can talk about and how they've come out of them better and stronger, and just getting that reinforcement all along the way was really critical. But if I had to say the starting point, I think so many people ignore their health when times are tough, and they think that, yeah, that's, I'll get back to that. I got to solve my business problem, or I get back to that, I'll solve my personal problem. It's actually the reverse. You feeling healthy makes you sleep better, makes you make better dietary choices. And when you're feeling better, you're probably performing better. You're not as edgy. You come up with better ideas. You move quicker on solutions. You don't get sort of a negative outlook on things. So I think it all ties in. It starts with health and mind. It's all connected. And I'm not some guru here. I didn't come on here to talk about any of that. But like, it really is. It was really important to get that in order. I'll tell you, like, personally, it's interesting. I actually lost a fair amount of weight and gained a fair amount of muscle along the way. But I would say that the cool thing about health is, whereas in business, you might say, oh, well, certain circumstances you couldn't control, you know, that interest rates went up and we had a lot of debt and that was painful, or e-commerce came down because people started going out in the real world again. These are things you can't control. But you're accountable. Like, you're the only one who can control whether you go to the gym. You're the only one who can control your choices and habits and whether you overeat or overdrink. So at least if you want to prove to yourself that you are actually up for a task, that's something that you can pretty immediately feel better about if you control it and you achieve good outcomes personally. So I don't know if that was the answer you were expecting or looking for, but that was something that resonated. Starting with health, making sure that's in check when times are tough.
Yeah, absolutely. It does resonate because both Al and I are very much into fitness and making sure. I know that if I'm taking care of myself outside of the business, then when I'm inside the business, then I'm going to perform at a much higher level.
Right.
I'm actually curious, and I've never asked this question, but I feel we're on that level where I can ask you, when shit hits the fan, who is your go-to person that you talk to?
It probably is probably my wife, unless shit hits the fan with my wife, but that's a different story.
Okay. Yeah, let's assume it's not with your wife. Yeah.
Right, right. No, I love to bounce ideas off her. You know, obviously she's not exactly objective. She wants me to win and she thinks I'm right on big matters, but I think she challenges me quite a bit on day-to-day, you know, thoughts, assumptions. And even if she doesn't necessarily have the business or the e-commerce background that I do, it's just refreshing to get an unfiltered view. So I think it's actually probably, or the other one would be my dad, who's quite a bit older than I am, and obviously in his mid-80s, and just, you know, tends to have an amazing amount of patience and vision and foresight. And a lot of times the things he'll say come true, maybe sometimes years later. So I feel like that's between my wife and my dad is probably a good balance. Also another answer you probably didn't expect.
I didn't expect, but I love the answer. And I'll just share this story as well, because it's something similar throughout the years, just many times. And it happened recently as well. And I said to my wife, I said, boy, I said, everyone should be so lucky as to have a cheerleader like you in their corner, because I am always right when it comes to business, right? Like, I am always making the right decisions. And quite frankly, we all make mistakes. We all know that. But to have someone in your corner that is just, I am behind you 100%. And I mean, that is just so powerful when you have a partner. And I don't have my dad with me anymore. He passed away a number of years ago, but I remember having those conversations, and he's been far around the road and he can see around those corners. Right. So it's nice that you can still have those conversations with your dad and benefit from that wisdom.
Very true. Very fortunate to have it.
Isn't it funny how much smarter your parents get from the time that you were a teenager and they didn't know anything and you knew everything, to the time that you become an adult and suddenly they get so much smarter? Isn't that weird?
It's weird and it's funny, right? Somehow it happens to hold up with pretty much everyone, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird how they don't know anything when you're a teenager.
I have a daughter now, and she probably thinks I'm an idiot, but you know, I'll show her over time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you'll get smarter. You'll get smarter by the time she's an adult. It happens all the time.
Right.
Hey, can you talk a little bit about Emerge 2.0? So, you know, you've, I don't know if rebranded is the right word, or maybe reemerged, pardon the pun, as Emerge 2.0. So just talk a little bit about how that has differed from the original Emerge 1.0 approach and what inspired that evolution.
The Emerge 1.0 vision and formula, if you will, was to essentially build a diversified, decentralized portfolio of e-commerce businesses. And that's really to say, acquire solid, profitable, market-leading niche brands in grocery, in golf, in experiences and pets and so forth, and allow those founders slash managers to continue on their journey in a decentralized fashion where we oversaw them, but we didn't really manage those businesses. So we kind of spread our wings. We were capital allocating. We were partnering with these groups and we were offering them some support and some services. And in an ideal world, that would work itself out. It would generate cash flow. We would take that cash flow and acquire more brands in other verticals, right? So we were looking to go wide in 1.0. Emerge 2.0 is actually the complete reverse and probably a function of the macro. The macro said to us, e-commerce is going to go through a slog. And by that, I mean anything artificially high from the peak is going to come down and has come down for 2-3 years in a row. And at the same exact time, as an acquirer of businesses and companies, a lot of roll-up stories, not just ours, end up acquiring businesses with some debt. And so we added a $25 million debt facility at the peak. And we would acquire these companies in part with debt and in part with cash and equity, right? As is typical with acquisitions. And of course, as you know, and as everyone knows, interest rates skyrocketed over the prior 2-3 years. And suddenly our cost of capital and our interest payments outweighed the cash flow of these businesses. So we had to recalibrate. And so that's what I mean by the circumstance kind of dictated where we ended up with 2.0. So the 2.0 era and vision, which really launched earlier this year, was centered around going all in on fewer, bigger opportunities that we could really win big at and manage directly, i.e. in a centralized fashion. After doing, you know, the strategic analysis and looking at what was out there in the market, we figured that selling all our, what we now call our non-core businesses, mainly in the US, to pay down a bunch of debt, we brought down our debt facility from $25 million down to 5+ on a net basis. And in the process, we said the winning opportunities are the ones we are closest to and that we are managing with our own hands here in Canada. Those being the grocery play, which is the true local business, our meat and seafood subscription business. We're the market leader in Canada till this day, and we're growing again. And then the golf business, which was sort of our, let's say, early roots, actually. We started early. It was one of our earliest verticals. And that's a business between Underpar for tee times and green fees to play golf at a discount, as well as Just Golf Stuff, which is our apparel and golf brands business. Those businesses are growing again. And so the pivot, if you will, yeah, it's not really a rebrand, although I do like the reemerge connotation there. So you may see it one day. But I think now this new phase is about us being in control of our own destiny. We've cut a lot of extra costs. We are managing those businesses. We're past the phase where we're overseeing other management teams. We're doing it directly. And we're doing it with two opportunities, grocery on the one hand, golf on the other. They're both pretty massive opportunities.
So, Ghassan, I want to explore something because you talked about pivoting, I guess would be a good word, from going wide to going narrow and focused. I think a lot of people would see what you have done and what you are doing as a big risk. You talked about the amount of debt that you had. So talk a little bit about how you approach risk, because I think that's something that, you know, a lot of people wouldn't, they'd be very fearful of maybe making that big a pivot, taking on that much debt, taking on that much risk. How do you approach risk?
I think it's so easy in retrospect for someone to say, wow, that was quite a bit of debt. Like, what were you maybe thinking at the time? I think that I've come to terms with some of the things we could have done better, but also some of the circumstances. You got to remember at the time, again, e-commerce was the hottest thing on earth. People were throwing money at us. And proportionate to the expected profit and cash flow of those collection of businesses at the peak, that wasn't all that crazy if you thought you could have $6 or $7 million in profit, right? Which was kind of what these things were doing at the peak. And so when you reverse engineer that $6 or $7 million in profit came down to $4 million in profit because of the come down, the natural come down back to post-pandemic or let's say pre-pandemic levels. When you look at all of that, then you say, you know, frankly, we could have been better in retrospect at downside risk preparation or calculation, if you will, you know, sensitivity analysis, that sort of thing. But of course, in an up market, when interest rates are low, everyone's excited, everyone around you is pushing for more deals. And that's kind of, we built quite a large organization north of 120 million at its peak. So we were preparing for that next phase of growth before everything retrenched in the macro and interest rates went up. Now, when that all happened, it really wasn't just like, I don't want to make it sound like a brave pivot. I think, frankly, it was a pivot out of necessity because we realized that who cares about the vanity or the optics of 100 million in sales, 4 million in EBITDA. That sounds beautiful. But if it's eating into our equity value, ultimately we're here for shareholders, but if it's eating into our equity value as a result of the interest rate and the debt being too high for the new size of the business post-pandemic, we knew that we needed to make tough choices, but that we still had amazing opportunities if we cleaned this up. So the decision then was, okay, well, we like all of our businesses. It's true. We really did. We had just bought them a couple of years prior. So obviously liked these businesses and they were profitable. The problem wasn't the profit. A lot of companies and probably a lot of people on your show are more like, we have great revenues, but our problem is we don't have the profit. Well, with Emerge, it wasn't that. We had the revenue. We had 100 million in top line. We had 4 million in profit, which is more than 99.9% of startups in Canada. However, that profit on its own is not the full story. The profit needs to now fill and translate to cash flow, right? If the profit is getting eaten up by all the debt and the interest, just like a regular consumer in their own life, doesn't matter how much money they're profiting or pocketing. If it all has to go to their mortgage and all that, then they're not rich, right? So to speak. And so for us, we said, you know what? Screw that. Let's figure out where we can, instead of win marginally with a bunch of different brands, let's win big with one or two major ideas. And let's cut most of our debt through selling the rest and paying down that debt. And that's exactly why we did it. We did it initially out of necessity. But then we genuinely got excited about how much bigger these things can get when we operate them directly and with focus and rigor.
We're pretty familiar with truLOCAL because obviously we had them on the podcast very early on and it turned out to be a fantastic episode. So thanks, Mark. Hope you're doing well. But when you're talking about grocery, you know, main one being truLOCAL and the golf verticals, why do you see these as real opportunities? And how does that align with your vision for Emerge going forward?
Right. So I think one of the reasons we fell in love with the truLOCAL business and the UnderPar business, which ended up being two brands now with Just Golf Stuff as well, which is a terrific, fast-growing business for us, is the fact that, you heard me just say the word brand, is the fact that these businesses are built around brand first, right? And by brand, I mean recognition, I mean community, I mean terrific word of mouth. And that ultimately has almost an accelerating effect on the main formula in e-commerce, in my view. The main formula in e-commerce is your CLTV, your customer lifetime value, in relation to your customer acquisition cost. So CLTV to CAC, right? You want a very favorable CLTV relative to your CAC. That's a winning formula. That's a winning business. And thankfully, both those verticals display disproportionately high CLTV to CACs, meaning we're saying these users on average, these customers are sticky. They stand for something. They align with your brand. They share it willingly, right? If you raise prices because you got higher costs, they understand. They don't quit on you as much, right? And so these are beautiful attributes to have and frankly, very rare attributes in the world of consumer e-commerce. You heard me at the very beginning of the episode say we were aspiring to be the constellation of e-commerce. So many Canadian companies and startups say, I want to be the constellation of X or Y. And that's obvious. Constellation is a 50-something billion, maybe even 100 billion. I can't remember, somewhere in between 50 to 100 billion market cap right now. And it's a collection of hundreds of software companies for anyone who still doesn't know. It's one of the most valuable companies in Canada. And the reason it doesn't work for e-commerce in the consumer lens is that consumers need attention. They're fickle. They need to be convinced. They'll go to the competitor if there's a better price. And you know how consumers are versus, say, a software company that does very vertical specific software for a government contract. The governments are boring. They're old school. They don't quit easily. They don't switch out easily. You can raise prices on them. They won't even notice, right? You don't have those advantages in consumers. So what you do have or need in consumer is brand. Brand is the substitute, and brand can't be faked. You have to have a real brand. When we bought these businesses were brands first, built with blood, sweat, and tears to the credit of the founders. And from our perspective, we wanted to help grow up these brands to the next level. And that is really the opportunity that we saw here. We're like, look, there's a stickiness. There's an affinity with these customers. There's suppliers who really value what we do. And by the way, we're market leaders in both meat and seafood subscription as a category and golf for discounted golf tee times and equipment in Canada. So we're market leader in both. We think both are still, even now, years later, a starting point to where they can each be. And by doing it with focus, and I say focus, and I use that, that's sort of the word of the year around here. Everyone knows it. They say we've moved away from running around managing little bits and thousands of decisions to making a few big decisions each week, each quarter, each year that we think will really, really move the needle for these businesses. And we're starting to see it as we reported our first return to growth quarter organically without M&A since Q4 2020. This just happened in Q2. And we expect to have a full-on return to growth year in 2024 is something we've indicated to the market.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, and I think it's so important what you said about brand. And I can think of a couple of examples. And we're talking, you know, different industries, obviously. But there's a restaurant that my wife and I have been going to for over 25 years now. And we kind of grew up with them. As a result, especially over the last couple of years, we've seen their prices go up.
Right.
And my income is not going up as fast as I'm seeing prices. But it's one of those things where I trust the brand. I trust the experience. Every time I go there, I know the experience that I'm going to get. So we're willing to pay those prices. Like we are that sticky customer. And then when I look at the brand that we're building for our company through Aria Benefits, we have six guiding principles. And if you do the first five, you get the number six, the wow experience. So people, at least I hope, and I'm pretty on top of this, when you come to work with our team, you are going to get a certain experience, and that is reflected in the brand. So I think that's very, very important to talk about. And by the way, you are talking about, you know, we're talking about some companies that go, and I'm just thinking, you know, for golf, and then we're having some meat and some seafood. Hey, this is all sounding very good to me. So I don't know if you did that by design, but man, is this sounding good?
Right. We're joking that we should rename the company to Essentials Commerce because, you know, groceries are obviously essential, but golf, interestingly enough, was actually deemed an essential service during the pandemic because
that's right.
It's one of the few. So, you know, who knows where we'll go with this, but no, not really. Not by design, I will say.
Robin already mentioned you used the word brand quite a few times in there. I also heard you use the word community. So I'm wondering, and you already alluded to this, so it leads me to my next question about the long-term opportunities for the potential for the verticals, the long-term opportunities.
Right.
And maybe, I'm thinking that maybe the words community and brand play into this. So can you just talk about what the strategy is and what long-term opportunities you see in these areas?
Yeah, so I totally see community as a springboard into more, obviously. And if we'll take truLOCAL as an example, we view ourselves as sort of the butcher box of Canada. There's a company in the US called Butcher Box that's well known. Yeah. And they're a $500 million revenue company, which is multiples the size of truLOCAL, even though we're the market leader in Canada. But I think it tells you about the size of this thing, the opportunity size. So I think there's a basic mathematical formula that we're looking at in terms of, as I said, the boring stuff. You know, if our CLTV is here, if our customer acquisition cost is here, why are we sitting at only 5,000 or 6,000 boxes a month at 225? We need to scale this up. And, you know, what's the 10x from here? We do believe all of that's possible. We think just in Canada, just with what we're doing, there's a $100-150 million opportunity just on kind of running as we are with more optimization, more fuel to the fire, if you will. That's fine and dandy. We've done $100-something million business before with Emerge, but the point is to do it sustainably now and to do it with legs that even go beyond that. And so that's where tying into community. And by the way, community isn't just our members ordering the boxes. It's also our local farmers and suppliers working with them on their needs, right, from a B2B perspective as well. And, you know, a lot of these companies, and in this case, the suppliers, they're very thankful. Like, they may have their own little online store now as well. They try to get some orders. At the end of the day, this is a scale game. We're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars online attracting and marketing on their behalf. We're telling their story. We can be doing a lot more technologically for them. We can give them insights. We can help them survey their products and their SKUs and just their overall experience. Because as you know, we're essentially a marketplace. We work with the farmers who ship to our warehouses, and we do this for nationwide, which we're the only player in Canada to do it nationwide. And then from here, we're working on shipping it directly to the consumer with dry ice packed in these boxes. They're picking their grass-fed beef, their organic chicken, their seafood. We're doing it. We have a good starting point, for example, on social, where some of our customers voluntarily share how they're opening these boxes, how they're reviewing foods. The food scene is big on organic and on healthy foods. So there's a lot of partnerships we can be striking. And so I think there's a lot of intersection between the customer side, i.e. the consumer, and as well as the supplier side. And we're just really scratching the surface. But from a pure economics perspective, each of our businesses, and I only spoke about grocery, but we also see the same with golf, we think each of these can be a multi-hundred million dollar opportunity. And that's what gets us excited ultimately about this new approach.
Yeah, makes sense. Exciting times.
Right.
Yeah, no kidding. Ghassan, when I first met you, and we chatted about this at the beginning of the podcast, you're going very wide and, of course, acquiring many, many companies. What is the strategy going forward for Emerge? Are we still going through acquisitions, or is it more toward organic growth, internal growth? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, look, we started Emerge originally as a sort of an M&A vehicle for e-commerce. So our background, I mean, I used to be an investment banker at Citigroup in New York, and a lot of folks around us, you know, we have a board member from Constellation Software. His name is Ian McKinnon. We have John Kim from Well Health, another roll-up story in health tech in Canada, billion-dollar story. So we have a lot of M&A influence around the table. And our aspiration and our DNA says we're going to get back in the M&A game and go back on the offensive. But this time around, as I said, instead of going broad and wide, want to zone in on very strategic assets that grow our grocery business and grow our golf business. And the thing I miss the most, and maybe again, this was originally by design, but to a fault, was that when we acquired the pet business in Virginia and the golf business in Ontario and an outdoor gear business in Atlanta, they had nothing to do with each other. There was zero synergy in reality. I wouldn't say zero, close to zero. And that was okay because they were supposed to all be printing money and growing. But when they started declining because of the climate, you needed synergy, but there was no synergy to show for. But this time around, anything we acquire needs to plug in, and the 1+1=4 formula needs to stand true. And so if we go acquire a true local competitor right now and add some geography, for example, in Quebec or in the US, where we're not big or strong, even that might give us new capabilities right away. And likewise, the learnings that we've proven out firsthand in 2024 to return to growth are things we can pass along and layer on playbook style into these competitors. So actually, M&A makes a lot more sense when you're vertical specific, which is where we're going with this. And so I would say that is absolutely part of the plan. But we need to keep our first and foremost focus on continuing our momentum on organic growth, meaning internal existing growth of the business itself today. If we weren't growing, I wouldn't be talking, you know, hey, M&A is a possibility again. But now that things are steering back up, now we're ready to roll our sleeves back up and say, who can we acquire? How can it be strategic? And how could we find true win-win long-term deals?
You know, one of the things that I have a lot of chats with Al, because we're in the car a lot together. And one of the things I admire about Al is he's always reading. He's paying for coaching, which is not cheap. He's trying to develop, even as a mature adult, right? Where he doesn't have to, he could be in cruise control. But one of the things that I've taken on, and I caught myself saying it, as I was kind of laughing to myself, was he had come into me one day and he said, I don't see problems anymore. I see opportunities. And it sounds like to me, over the last couple of years, you have chosen to see, hey, all these learnings that you just talked about that you can pass on to these other companies. And while other people might see some challenges, I think you're seeing opportunities. At least that's what I'm getting from just chatting with you today.
Listen, you have to have that sort of mindset to see $150 million market cap company sort of evaporate from a pure value perspective or what the market ascribes to you, for you to be around and make it through the storm and be ready and smiling while you're talking about this next phase of growth that we're about to embark on, you would have had to have some sort of semblance of positivity, calm, patience, like gray hair, right? That's part of the journey. We should compare the before after since the last time I was here.
I know, me too.
We can probably do that.
Do you know those sort of comparisons when a president leaves the White House, how they look like after?
How they look after, yeah.
We got to do that for me. Like peak pandemic, hundreds of millions market cap. Here's where we are. But guess what? I'm still smiling.
You are.
Right? I'm still smiling, but the only way you get to do that is if you have a deep and rooted belief in yourself, in your team, the people around you that make the magic work, the lieutenants on the ground, you know, in our board, in our support system now that we feel is rock solid. And now in the learnings that we can apply, the free, I want to call it a free education because it's been a very costly one, frankly. But in the education and in the relationships and in the mistakes as well, right? Not just the learning, the actual mistakes that we have now equipped ourselves to get going on this next phase. And guess what's happening now? Revenues are growing. Interest rates are coming down. The dust is settling. We're ready to get going again, right? So everything that took us down, the revenues coming down from the peak, the interest rates going up, all of that's reversing right now. And we're at the prime moment as we look at 2025 and we say, look, 2024 was the ultimate springboard year. We proved we can clean up. We paid down debt, our debt facilities down from 25 plus to 5 million net. That's a huge delta. And we're now ready to tackle this phase. We've shown we can grow these businesses again here in 24 for the most part. And we still have a quarter left, which we're excited about. And then next year is about, let's go on the offensive. Let's show the world. Let's shock the world with what we can do, what we have in our repertoire that people hadn't seen coming. That is what we're excited about. That's why we're still smiling.
Love it.
I think there's a lot of great lessons that you've talked about today. And ironically, earlier today on one of our podcasts, one of our guests said something and I said, oh, I love that. I'm going to add it to my repertoire. I just didn't think I would have the opportunity to use it so quickly. But one of the things he said is never let a good crisis go to waste. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, you know, you faced some crises, like you said, with interest rates and with some of the challenge you had,
right?
But you didn't let it go to waste. You met it head on and turned it around. So yeah, I think that's a great lesson that I'm sure that other people will appreciate. Before we wrap up, one question that I would just love to hear, and you've already alluded to it a little bit, anything you would approach differently if you had the chance to do it all over again?
Yeah, you know, I always hear folks say like, no regrets, loved it, loved the journey. And I have a ton of regrets in the micro, but I think they're going to help me in the future macro. And what I mean by that is, like, there were a lot of little things along the way where, for example, we talked a little bit about sensitivity analysis. I feel like those are lessons I'll never forget. You know, when times are exciting or good and there's hype and there's trend and it sounds like you can't be wrong, as I always say, like, the minute you feel invincible is the moment you no longer are, right? And you look at it and you say, well, anything that excites you, you got to pause and you truly, truly got to sensitize and say, what if the world goes to shit? In this case, what if interest rates go up eventually? Because we're near zero, right? Like forever. Like it felt like forever, but it's 10 years of amazing fiscal policy in our world. Like, so what if that changed? What if there were some wars? Like there's always these threats of wars, but they won't happen. But what if they did happen? Like, what if you couldn't refinance this debt at cheaper? What if some of these acquisitions, we would say, well, maybe some acquisitions would go down, but would all of them really go down at the same time? Like, no way, right? But no, yeah, yes way. Like all of them went down at the same time, run by the same founders who built them, mind you. It's not like we came in and switched them up. So this was pure macro, nothing to do with anything other than this is the hand you got served. So if you had better sensitivity analysis, you would have been in a better place. So I feel like being prudent, being grounded, even if the market tells you you're worth a million times EBITDA, like it doesn't matter. Like you need to be grounded. And I think that's something, that composure, that calm, is something we've really, and I've really gained in both my personal and professional life. So I think that's probably one of the biggest lessons. And then the other one goes without saying is just never, ever give up, right? Like really never give up, because it is very much an infinite game, not just within Emerge or within business, but overall, if you have such a big multi-decade outlook. If you're talking about 20 years, 40 years, 50 years, right? And you want to get to a point where your kids think you're smart again, then if you have that sort of horizon, as you were saying, then it's all micro. This stuff isn't even macro at all. 1 year, 3 years, 4 years, 2 years, like you're going to make mistakes. And if this is the trough and it's a 2 year trough, who cares? In 20 years, it's going to be 2 years out of 20. Like if you take those learnings and apply them, you're in a better place no matter what.
I think people are going to get so much out of this episode. And Ghislaine, I honestly can't recall if we had implemented Al's signature question the first time you came on. But I think we're going to ask because it's been a while since you've been on and maybe things have evolved as time went on. So I'd love, Al, for you to take it away. And I have a feeling Ghislaine's got a good answer for this.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I'd love to hear your answer, Ghislaine. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees you might be planting? It could be in your professional world or your personal world.
Are you calling me old, Al?
Well, that has come up before, but I think that speaks to the wisdom and the experience as opposed to age.
That's right.
I'll take it. Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind, and then this may not be the exact direct answer, but it's, you know, some sort of spin on the same topic, is that, you know, we've seen so many staff members of ours and of mine, both in Emerge and in other prior ventures that I've been involved with. And rarely will you see or have anything satisfy you more as an operator, as a founder, as an entrepreneur, than seeing talent go on and do great things, both in business and in life, right? And so to your point, I feel like we spend so much time, of course, selfishly, I want our talent to perform so that we win and that I win. That goes without saying. But eventually what happens is all the time you spend, if let's say I'm sitting down with a mid-level or junior marketer, right? Or a young accountant or an M&A junior or what have you. It could be anything. And we invest the time. I invest my knowledge, my mistakes. I sit down with them and I spend hours and hours with them articulating why we should do it this way or why it went wrong that way or if they did something wrong, how to improve. And we invest as operators, as management folks. We do so much to try to embolden and grow our talent. And eventually they walk away and maybe we're sad at first when they leave us. And then eventually there's a LinkedIn post about where they ended up going if you're not close enough with them to disclose it in the first place. But a lot of times it makes me super proud to see people move up in our youngest startups. Even when I was 25, I had my first company. Now I see people, they're at Shopify, they're in manager roles at Shopify, they're at Lightspeed, they're climbing the ladders in different places. Some of them have gone on to start their own companies and raise capital, and they're kind of peers of mine suddenly. And it's like, I love that they came from my university and our university. And a bit of the secret in all of this is that we were learning it as we went too, right? So a lot of times these guys and girls were younger than I was. I was 25, they might've been 22. I was 27, they might've been 24. It's not just an age thing, but you know, we were learning as we went. We poured our heart into all of these hundreds of people, by the way. I've employed over 350 people over the last 14, 15 years. And to see them thrive and grow. And by the way, the best sign I get is because they keep calling me back for references when they move jobs or they go into new things. So then I know that either I'm a good reference, I know what to say, or they're actually really great people that I think very highly of. I think the truth is probably both. I love my people wherever they go, I follow. And that's probably my best contribution is to see everyone else grow and go on to do great things and then bump into them and hear the positive sentiment.
Yeah, well, you didn't disappoint with your answer. And I like the word that you used, university, in there, right? Because we think of that as a higher learning institution. So it's interesting that you chose to use that word in reference to some of the experiences that you've had with your team.
Not to get too academic, I don't know if they'd agree with that, but it makes me feel better. So we'll run with it for today.
We'll go with it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we call our folks that have moved on alumni. So we have ARIA alumni out there now. And it's turned out to be really, really good relationships.
Love it.
So it's wonderful. Ghislaine, for listeners who want to find out more about what you're doing or just chat with you personally, what's the best way to reach out?
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is kind of where I'm at. I mean, I'm on other social platforms as well, but Ghislaine Hal is on LinkedIn. I also have at InstaG on X and Instagram, but LinkedIn's probably my go-to if you want to DM me or if you need anything or if I have any other business opportunities for us to explore together.
Okay. And before I get to the end of the episode, I just want to give some people some advice because I started this podcast about 4 years ago and I met Ghislaine pretty early into the podcast and we've kept in touch over the years. And it's amazing what happens when you reach out to good people, you surround yourself with good people. We're at a point in the podcast where it's on a global platform and I've got relationships all over the world. And I call this person that I'm looking at on my screen a friend of mine now. So it's something that you won't regret. So get out there, get on LinkedIn, say hi to Ghassan, say hi to some other people that you want to meet because it will bring great things into your life. Well, that does it for today's episode. I really enjoyed this conversation. I think you can tell Al did too. Hope you did as well. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or join the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here clearly. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.